At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Check 1, 2. Check 1, 2. Welcome to the Film Room Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Proctor. And in this show, I'm going to break down the game of college football and give you a quick listen scouting report to give you everything you'll need to know each week as the Utes and Cougars buckle up their chin straps. Listen in and level up. The Film Room is your weekly game plan. Okay, everybody, welcome to week 7 of the college football season. This is another episode of the Film Room Podcast. We appreciate you guys coming in with us week in, week out, reviewing from film study, reviewing our scouting reports. This really is a labor of love, and we do it because we like it. We do it because we love it. This week, we're going to be reviewing the football season so far for the University of Utah very briefly, and then we'll be diving into our scouting report for the ASU game this coming Saturday night. thus far, a year that has played out most of the way that Utah fans have expected it to go. The Utes are 4-1 now coming out of their bye week in week 6, with the only gaffe on the season so far being a week 4 loss to the, at the time, ranked number 16 Texas Tech Red Raiders. By the way, I feel like I deserve to kind of toot my own horn. If we're looking over my preseason record predictions so far, Utah, as I predicted, was 4-1 with a loss against Texas Tech, and BYU thus far, hopefully not surprising that they are 5-0. So I'm 10-0 so far with my season predictions. Looking back on Utah's season so far, it's kind of fun to look back and see which wins actually hold a lot of value. The UCLA game at the start of the season, we thought was like this amazing result, right? Against a team that has usually given us a good game in the past, has given us fits before. And then as we went week by week, we're like, oh man, maybe that UCLA win doesn't look very good. But everyone has already seen, everyone's been talking about it for a week already. UCLA winning over number 7 ranked Penn State, whatever they were ranked, top 10 Penn State. So all of a sudden that UCLA win looking pretty good again for Utah. Games like Cal Poly and Wyoming and honestly kind of West Virginia as well, not holding much weight. But again, you look to see not who's the opponent that they beat, but how do they play in those games, right? Cal Poly, Utah didn't look amazing. They looked pretty good. And they were able to post like 60 or 70 points, 69 points or something like that. Wyoming, again, didn't look great, but they were able to come out on top, win the game by a couple scores. West Virginia, I thought that Utah looked pretty good, honestly, all things considered. It just was that Texas Tech game where we came in to the game a little bit flat and didn't quite perform the way that we hoped we could have. So thus far for Utah, really great start to the season, 4-1. Still very much in the race, not only for the Big 12 championship, but also for a possible position in the college football playoff. You know, not a lot of the country is really high on Utah right now. They keep on dropping. In their bye week, they dropped actually in the rankings from being unranked and the first team out to being unranked and maybe the second or the third team out. I think that came on the tail end of a couple, top 10 upsets from unranked teams. But I think if Utah is able to come in this week and have a good game against ASU, I would very much expect Utah to get back into that that top 25 AP poll. Which, by the way, I don't love the AP poll. I think actually the coaches poll is more telling. I don't think that coaches have any reason to have as much of a conflict of interest when they're voting for other schools that they think are quality programs. So I like the coaches poll a lot more. I think they understand a lot more about football and the teams they are playing and the competition they're up against. And I think that's a more accurate representation of which teams really are the ones to worry about. So anyway, diving into this week's scouting report. Again, we are diving into number 21 ASU. That game is scheduled to be played at Rice-Eccles Stadium in Salt Lake City. The game will kick off at 8:15 Mountain Daylight Time. Be number 21 Arizona State, who is 4-1 as well. Currently, the line is Utah by 5.5. Okay, we'll talk more about that in a minute. But so far this year, ASU has had several big wins in close games against both Baylor and then at the time ranked number 24 TCU. I will say this so far about being in the Big 12. You know, Utah fan. I've been a Big 12 participant for just over a year, and for BYU just over 2 years. I love how many close games there are in the Big 12. I mean, it seems like every year it's kind of a repeat almost of the Pac-12 circle of suck, which I talked about last week in my episode. But I love how much competition there is. I wish there was this much competition in the Big 10. It seems like maybe this year there is that much competition in the SEC, and lo and behold, all of a sudden the SEC has like 8 different ranked teams. But I love it. So they had really close games against both Baylor and TCU. Their lone loss came in a back and forth game with Mississippi State early in the year, where they went down 17-0 early, and then they scored 20 unanswered points to almost complete the comeback before they surrendered a game losing touchdown to Mississippi State with about 30 seconds left in the game. So that's kind of where ASU sits. They are also coming into this Utah game off of a bye week, so both teams should be rested up, prepared, plenty of time to watch film and get ready for this opposing team. Diving in, the first thing I'd like to mention about ASU is Coach Kenny Dillingham. He is kind of a polarizing figure for a lot of folks. Polarizing in the sense that you either love him or you hate him. And I think he fits perfectly into that category of guys where if he's yours, you love him. You would die for that man. You'd go into war for that man. And I can totally understand why. He's passionate. He's young. He's an ASU alum himself. He just bleeds. I don't know what color they call the red scarlet. I don't know. Whatever they call their color red and whatever yellow, gold, or whatever they call it. He bleeds those colors, right? He bleeds them loud and proud. He goes to bat for his players. He's got a lot of energy. I can see why ASU fans love this guy. And honestly, I would love to play for him. I'd love to coach with him. I'd love if he was the coach of the team I rooted for. I understand it. On the other side of that coin, I can see how a lot of folks are just, he really grinds their gears. Because he's so passionate, I think he can, really get on people's nerves. And I think for me as a BYU fan, I know this is our Utah episode, but for those of you that watched the BYU versus ASU game last year in Tempe, I thought the way he conducted himself at the end of that game when it was obvious there was still time left on the clock, I wasn't a fan of that. Anyway, this is not an opinion show, or at least it's not trying to be. Kenny Dillingham, great head coach, doing amazing things with ASU after Herm Edwards left a couple years back. So very much back on the right track down there in Tempe. I'm sure they're very happy to have Coach Dillingham down there. Now, ASU's offense is top 20 in rushing, but they're only 67th in scoring overall, and they've barely made the top 90 in passing yards. Most of those rushing yards I discussed come from their quarterback, Sam Levitt, and their primary running back, Relik Brown, who we'll talk about. This offense, the ASU offense, matches up against Utah, who is a top 25 defense overall. They're 16th in points allowed at under 15 per game. However, they do allow 140 yards on the ground per game, which is, I think, good for like 60th or so. Diving into the offense, the personnel that you want to be aware of, obviously, the first one to be aware of is their quarterback, number 10, Sam Levitt, brother of former BYU and Utah State safety, Dallin Levitt. Sam is 6'2", 200 pounds. He's a sophomore, so he's young, but he does not play like a sophomore, I can tell you that. So far this year, he is 99 for 157, which boasts 63%. Not high, not low. It's pretty close to being quite good. He's thrown for just over 1,000 yards. He has 8 touchdowns and 3 interceptions on the season. I think this is easily the best quarterback that Utah has faced this year. And honestly, his stats sort of surprise me. Not the yardage production, but the touchdowns to interceptions surprises me. I would have expected that through five games for him, he would have had 10-plus touchdowns and fewer interceptions. What he has done, another way he massively contributes to the team, is, like I mentioned, he's the second leading rusher on the team. He has 55 carries with 280 yards of rushing on the ground, as well as five more touchdowns on the ground, in addition to those eight that he has through the air. So touchdowns responsible for 13 so far this year. He has a great arm, but he has even better feet. He is agile, he's fast, and boy, can he gain yards with his legs. He goes through his reads really well without too much stress or too much pressure, which is helped by the fact that his O-line gives him a ton.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Of time. He's got really good arm talent. He can throw on the run. He can sidearm. He can jump throw. He can short throw. He can throw short. He can throw long. Though most of his completions are kind of in the short to mid length area. But he can throw long if he has guys, you know, a little more wide open. He can throw outside. He can throw inside. Like I said, he is the best quarterback that Utah has faced so far this year. You know, nothing against Baron Morton for Texas Tech. He actually got hurt in the Utah game, so we didn't get to see the best of Baron Morton. But I still think that Sam Leavitt is the best, most dynamic quarterback that Utah will face. At least they have faced so far this year. Probably will face so far this year. When the defensive backfield for whoever ASU is playing, when that defensive backfield is doing their job and Sam Leavitt's receivers have worked their way, you know, 20 plus yards downfield, he very rarely pulls the trigger for the deep ball. Like I said, unless they're kind of wide open, he usually chooses to take all the green grass in front of him, which is a great option for him because he's so darn fast. It's a tendency that minimizes risk of turnovers and one that Utah really needs to be aware of. If I'm Utah, I probably look at doing some sort of spy, you know, maybe a three-man rush, see if you can put some pressure on him and then have a linebacker spy on him at all times. If there's any area for weakness with Sam Leavitt, it's a very specific one. Whenever he throws a swing pass to a running back out of the backfield, there are times where he tends to lob it up a little bit high. He puts a little bit too much air underneath it. So if Utah's linebackers can kind of be on those, that creates an opportunity to either take the ball away, take it the other direction, or to at least tee off on a running back for a pretty gnarly tackle for a loss. So that is all we will expect from the quarterback perspective, unless, you know, cross your fingers, this never is the case. But unless Utah gets down really big, then maybe you'll see a backup. But Sam Leavitt is the number one guy there at the quarterback. I believe this is the next biggest guy to be aware of. Most people are going to say that you want to be aware of number zero, Jordan Tyson, the receiver, who we will definitely talk about. I think this guy would give me the most fits if I was Utah's defensive coordinator, if I was Coach Scally. Number three, Relique Brown. He's 5'9", 195 pounds. He's a junior USC transfer who sat on the bench behind Cam Scataboo last year. Now he's the primary workhorse. He has 77 carries for 506 yards and two touchdowns. Doesn't seem like very many touchdowns, but believe me, when you watch film on this guy, you'll see what I'm talking about. He also has 19 receptions for over 100 yards, which makes him ASU's third most productive pass catcher. He's got a decent amount of meat on his bones for like the size of his frame. He's 5'9", not super, super tall, but he's 195 pounds. And with as much weight as he has on his body, he has incredible acceleration and top speed. I mean, this dude will run out everybody. He is a multiple hats to the ball type of tackle. He can take a good hit too, because he's got a lower center of gravity, which makes it easier for him to get lower than you if you're a prospective tackler. I think if Utah's defensive line and linebacking core, if they can do a good job of containing Relique Brown, number three, it would do massive things for helping Utah's defense be able to make ASU one-dimensional, honestly, and be able to focus more on trying to limit Sam Levitt's production on the ground. So you'll also want to look out for ASU's third most productive runner after Sam Levitt and Malik Brown, number six, Kanye Udo. He is a little bit of a different size than these other two. He's 6'1", 220. He's a junior. He's got about 40 carries for about 150 yards and one touchdown. Not a lot of production from ASU this year just because he's not the primary guy, but he was an 1,100-yard rusher for Army last season. He's not getting enough volume. Obviously, you see those kinds of numbers for the Sun Devils. He's much bigger than Relique Brown. He's used more in those short-yarded situations where size and strength is maybe more beneficial than speed, but don't let his size fool you. This dude is still quick. And despite his size, he can still shoot through a hole and be pretty nimble about it. So don't be surprised if you see number six, Kanye Udo, out there. Moving on to the tight end position group. This is a guy we talked about last year. We didn't see as much from him last year as we thought we would, but still someone I believe we need to pay attention to. Number seven, I don't know how to pronounce his name, Chaimon. To me, it looks like, you know how Michael Jackson used to always say, Chamon? It looks like it's spelled that way. So Chamon Mateer, he returns to the scene. He's 6'4", 255 pounds. He's a junior. He has 17 receptions for 160 yards and one touchdown. So again, not a lot of offensive production for him, but he's an important guy to pay attention to. He averages just under 10 yards per catch, which is likely aided by his size. He is ASU's second leading pass catcher. But that isn't saying as much, since he only has about one third the production as the Sun Devils' leading receiver, Jordan Tyson. He's not especially fast, nor does he run like really crisp routes or anything, but ASU does a good job schematically of getting him open when it matters, right? He won't likely gash you with huge plays, but if you let him get kind of out of your peripheral vision, if you lose track of him, he will likely convert some big second or third downs when you were hoping that your defense would get off the field. He has good hands. He's hard to bring down, so definitely someone to pay attention to. Now, kind of the guy that everyone's paying attention to the most on the offense, besides, I think, Sam Levitt is obviously the star, but in connection to Sam Levitt, he wouldn't be nearly as much of a star without this receiver, number zero, Jordan Tyson. He's 6'1", 195 pounds. He's a junior, returning for his third year in Tempe. He has 39 targets so far this year. 39 catches, receptions, for 483 yards and seven touchdowns. He averages 12 and a half yards per catch, and ASU, they want to get the ball in the hands of Jordan Tyson. He is their go-to guy, and there's a reason for it. He reminds me a little bit, when you watch him on film, he reminds me of like Utah's Ryan Davis or BYU's Chase Roberts. He just always seems to be open. He's great at creating space. You never see him drop the ball. ASU tries to get him the ball in every part of the field that they can, in the middle, out wide, deep, short, in the flat. He is a do-it-all receiver. What you won't see them use him for is running the football. He has zero carries at all this season, so you likely don't have to look out for any jet sweeps or reverses from him, although that may be something that ASU is interested in throwing into their playbook this week to kind of throw it off, because to throw Utah off, it would be a great way to do that. There are other receivers we could probably talk about, but I think those, and I'll tell you why right now, those four guys, Sam Levitt at quarterback, number three, Relique Brown at running back, number seven, Chamon Mateer, and number zero, Jordan Tyson at wide receiver. Those are the four people I think you need to pay the most attention to, because if you look at ASU's offense, those four players account for about 75% of their offensive productivity, both in the run game and through the air. Okay, meaning that for Utah, if each of your defensive position groups can do their job to shut down just one player each, right? We have to do a little bit more than one player each. They can force ASU to have to beat them with athletes who are more untested, have gotten fewer reps, fewer touches, are maybe less up to the task of playing against one of the best defenses in the Big 12, okay? I want you to notice something else, though, about ASU that makes them dangerous. ASU's three leading receivers, number one is a wide receiver, number two is a tight end, and number three is a running back, meaning they're able to get the ball into the hands of a multitude of different playmakers and force the defense to have to defend the entire field. Coach Scally had better be coaching his boys to keep their eyes open, keep their heads on a swivel, because this offense can attack from anywhere, and it most commonly happens when Levitt gets his feet moving. Okay, talking about their offensive line, these guys are good. They're big, they're strong. They consistently give Sam Levitt like 4 or 5 seconds to throw the ball or to scramble. They have great, great pass protection. They aren't particularly fast, which does leave them susceptible to pass rushers that are quick off the ball or that are fast around the end. They do a fairly good job with run blocking, but their lack of speed, I think, is what leads ASU to use a lot of pulling tight ends, pulling H-backs to do their outside kick blocks. We'll talk a little bit more specifically about that, what that looks like for them in just a minute here. They're limited in speed, basically. Their offensive line, they're big, they're strong, they're not terribly fast. Okay, so that's what Utah has going for them. And Utah is well known for having, you know, fast, strong, nimble defensive linemen, for example, like John Henry Daly. I think ASU's O-line is solid. They probably aren't as much of a challenge as Texas Tech's offensive line was for Utah. But if Utah's defensive front doesn't dig in early, ASU could take off in the first quarter. Schematically, for ASU, again, like most teams Utah has played against this year, pretty standard spread offense. They run a lot of gun, a lot of pistol. From run blocking, I like the way that they run their offense, their running game, their rushing game. Number one, as we mentioned, they run Sam Levitt a lot. QB sneaks in or tush pushes in short yardage situations. They'll use QB draws out of a wide kind of five wide receiver situation. They'll run lots of quarterback power. They are not shy at all about running Sam Levitt. And again, if you watch the film, that dude is electric. I would love to have Sam Levitt on my team. I hate to say it, I think that Sam Levitt is what every Utah fan hoped that Devin Dampier was. Don't get me wrong, I love Devin. I'm so glad he's here. He is saving our season compared to what we would have had with Lisa's son, I believe. I believe that 100%. I do believe that Sam Levitt is the real deal. I believe that he's everything that Utah fans wish we had in Devin Dampier. Zone running schemes, zone blocking schemes. They run a lot of the basic stuff. They run an inside zone with Relique. They run an outside zone with Relique. And they run a stretch, which is basically we're gonna run to the sideline as fast as we can. We're gonna hand this ball off to you outside the tackle or right at the tackle, and then all the offensive linemen and receivers and H-backs and everybody, they're all gonna do what's called a reach block, where they're all gonna run really fast towards the boundary, try to hinge and turn their shoulders back to the sideline so that they create a little wall, and the running back's gonna try to get out there on the outside. So that play, plus this other one I'm going to mention right now, they run very frequently out of either gun or pistol. They run a 25 down, which basically the way it looks is, again, you either got the running back behind the quarterback or next to the quarterback, and then they'll usually do this out of some sort of trips or something like that, where they have an H-back or a tight end to kind of in close to the line. And then what they're going to do is they're going to have, say your trips is off to the right and your tight end or H-back is kind of offset to the right, just barely outside the tackle. They're going to run this play to the left, and all the offensive linemen are going to block right. They're going to block down, and then that H-back is going to cut really hard left and run along that line of scrimmage, and he's going to kick out that defensive end to create a hole. Now, typically, this, number one, they love to run this play with Relique Brown. They run it all the time. Usually the way it happens is Relique will take the ball towards the line of scrimmage, and maybe he hits that hole, and maybe he stays on it. But usually if he goes through the hole, the first thing he does is he bounces outside and he uses his speed to get around the edge, as opposed to doing, you know, what a lot of running backs are coached to do, which is to go, you know, from the center of the field to the hash marks, to the numbers, to the sidelines. He goes from the hole immediately to the sideline and gets around and is able to get yardage, even though he's kind of stretching himself and making him run further than he has to. He's just that fast. So Utah has got to set firm edges, force him to cut back lanes, And Utah's linebackers have got to be disciplined at filling those gaps, filling those cutback lanes, if they hope to contain this kid. ASU also runs a lot of jet sweep, or what we call a jet midline option, where they'll line up in, again, usually a gun formation with a trips or maybe twins on to one side or and the other. And then they'll bring a guy in a jet option or a jet motion across the field. And then Sam Levitt is going to read basically the middle of the offensive line, the defensive line. And if those defensive linemen flow with that jet motion to the sideline, he's just going to pull that ball and run right up the middle. And he's able to find that gap pretty easily. Or if the defensive ends and the defensive linemen in general, the linebackers don't flow with that. If it's just the one safety or the one cornerback that's trying to track that receiver across the field, then he'll hand that ball off and let the motion receiver have numbers on the sideline. As far as the passing game is concerned, like I mentioned before, their number one strategy is get the football to Jordan Tyson whatever way we can, right? Now, in that, they do a good job. Like I mentioned, they are a standard spread offense. They take 99% of their snaps. If they're not in the red zone or not in short yardage situations, 100% of their snaps are out of the shotgun. They will run a smattering of different routes, right? They do a really good job of not just running only vertically stretching routes or only horizontally stretching routes or, you know, man coverage based routes or zone coverage based routes. They do everything. Okay. They have a really well varied passing game. They do run some screens. They'll run some, what we call a spot screen or a wide receiver screen out of the boundary, where, you know, Sam Levitt will turn, throw the ball to the sideline immediately, and he has maybe two or three blockers out there that are either other receivers or offensive linemen running out to the boundary. They'll run lots of hitches. They do like hitches a lot. I will say that is one thing they do. Lots of hitches, lots of like deep outs or deep ins, what we call a dig route. Okay. And they'll usually run that obviously when you're going against a cover two. Those routes, the in routes, the digs, the hitches, those are designed to find holes in the zone, right? So if you've got maybe two linebackers covering the middle, two corners covering kind of the outside flat, and then two safeties covering deep, those routes, those either the in routes or the hitch routes, are designed to try to sit right between the two zones on kind of the seam of those zones. And Sam Levitt does an okay job at, you know, making those reads quickly and delivering that ball quickly on the seam of those boundaries, so those zone coverages. They will also use spacing quite well. I mentioned before about Chaimon Mateir. You know, they'll do things where they run like a double slant, like a kind of like a follow slant or a follow in, where two guys will both run in routes, and the first guy will take all the linebackers across the formation as they follow him, and then the other guy just runs the same route behind him, and there's kind of been some space cleared out. Okay. So look for some basic, you know, spread offense passing game. The two biggest wrinkles, I think, for Utah's defense are going to be, number one, as I mentioned, a spy on Sam Levitt. Have to make sure you limit the damage that he can do on his feet when he's scrambling. And then number two is just, you got to shut down Jordan Tyson. He's the number one passing option. If you can shut him down, force other guys on ASU to have to beat Utah, then I think you're going to have a good time. When it comes to goal line or short yardage situations, I mentioned that they like to do lots of QB sneaks or tush pushes, okay? QB power. One play that I thought was really cool that they ran against Baylor, and this was, again, to Jordan Tyson. This was the one play that I saw out of under center formation, ace formation. They brought Jordan Tyson in a jet motion across the formation, and then before the snap, he then turned around to kind of go motion behind Relik Brown, the running back. And then at the snap of the ball, then he flipped another 180 and kind of ran out to the boundary again on a whip swing route to the flat. And it's kind of this very much a backyard football type of route where you're running left and then you run right and then, oh, just kind of running back left again. And it was wide open. So something to definitely pay attention to for Coach Scally. I don't know who Coach Scally thinks his most athletic defensive back is this year, but that's that's who you have to put on Jordan Tyson. Flipping the script here, ASU's defense. This defense returns a bunch of guys, all of whom had a chance to play in the college football playoff last fall. This is a defense that sort of bent but didn't break, if you will, or at least in comparison to their offense. They averaged just over 22 points allowed per game last year, which isn't as big of a deal when your offense averages almost 33 points per game. This year, it's much the same. The defense allows 21 points per game, and the offense averages 29. So that comes together a little bit closer. But still, as many points as they concede, this defense is nasty. I mean, we're talking every stat you could want in a defense. TFLs, sacks, forced fumbles, pass deflections, interceptions, they've got it all. Before we dive into that too much, let's just talk very generally. They're pretty vanilla with their defense. I think they rely a lot on their mentality, their approach, their intensity, their, for lack of a better term, like the Mamba mentality type of approach, right? I'm not going to make it fancy. I'm just going to tell you that I'm going to tell you exactly what I'm going to do, and I'm going to believe in my ability to still do it better than you. So they run a 4-2-5 nickel. Diving into the defensive line, I will say this. These guys did not get a great push up front against Baylor. They got off the ball fine as far as their timing and you know, getting off quick, but their feet got very stationary, and they stood pretty upright trying to fight with their upper bodies, their upper extremities. They did better occasionally, you know, when their feet got more active. They definitely had some negative plays against Baylor, but this is definitely an area of weakness for ASU, I think, which is why ASU's leading tacklers are linebackers and defensive backs. If you're going to be aware of anyone on the defensive line, it's number 10 defensive end Clayton Smith. He is 6'5", 255. He is the sack leader for ASU. He has 4 sacks on the season, 13 total tackles. And he's only, by the way, those 4 sacks, he's only half a sack away from his season total last year. So this dude will get in the backfield for sure. He's probably the guy that puts the best pass pressure on. If there's anyone else to pay attention to, it's number 99 defensive tackle. He's a big boy, CJ Fite. He's 6'2", 305 pounds. He has 13 tackles, not a ton of tackles, but a decent amount. He also has 1 sack and a forced fumble. As far as the linebacking core, and then again, we'll kind of dive into the blitz and or stunt packages after that. The linebackers are a different story from the defensive line. In order for Utah to be successful in the running game this week, these linebackers have got to be blocked, and they've got to be blocked well. Number 8, Jordan Crook, 5'11", 220. By the way, I always love when the leading tackler on the team is number 8, because, to toot my own horn, I was leading tackler on my team, and I was number 8, so I always love that. This senior is the leading tackler on the team. He has 40 total tackles, including 2 sacks. He's a little slower on his reads and on his first step off the snap, but he's often just like right at the center of things. So he gets in there and makes a lot of tackles. Number 44, Keyshawn Elliott. Number 44. He's 6'2", 235. He's the second leading tackler on the team. So this duo, number 8, number 44, that's where most of their tackles come from. He has 37 tackles and 4 sacks. He does a good job of making his read, you know, fairly quickly and trying to fit his gap, or at least to go up and try to meet his blocker, try to blow up the block, or force something back to the rest of the team. These two linebackers are both very good. Another linebacker that you might see either rotate in, or when ASU does, like they do like a 5-3 front in the red zone situations or goal line situations, or like, you know, fourth and short, third and short. Number 18, Martell Hughes. A little smaller than the rest of them. He's, taller, but less weight. 6'2", 220. He's a sophomore. He has 21 tackles, and he did snag the game-winning interception against TCU 2 Fridays ago. He's much faster into pass coverage than the other two. Very rarely does ASU blitz a safety. Most of their blitzes are going to come from their linebackers. And again, it's pretty vanilla. One linebacker blitz most of the time. If they're blitzing, maybe 2 linebackers. I did see one time where they, and I'll talk about this guy soon, they blitzed their safety number 4, Miles Rouser. But again, it's pretty vanilla. As far as defensive backs, as a position group, these guys are real ball hawks. They're very good at getting their hands on the ball, whether just to swat the ball away or actually going up and coming down with it. Almost all of these guys have multiple pass deflections and or interceptions. ASU, I was doing some research. They do some interesting thing. They have some sort of like hybrid defensive back role where they're like maybe a linebacker, maybe a safety, maybe a corner. I don't know. They kind of just they go all the way around. They refer to them as Sparky and Devil, which I think is, I guess, kind of cool. I wasn't able to find any information as to which player is which and what that means. Just be aware that, in general, their defensive backs are a little more fluid in the responsibilities or their alignments to things that they're asked to do. So, first guy to be aware of, I think this is the best – I don't think. This is their best defensive back, their best safety. I'm going to call him the strong safety, Sparky, whatever they call it. Number four, Miles Rouser. He's 6'1", 195 pounds. He has 35 tackles and 2 pass deflections. He fits really well on run plays. In fact, Miles seems like the only DB for ASU that's interested in run defense. He is active in his reads. He's always getting down for run support from his strong safety position. Like I mentioned before, they will blitz him. I mean, it almost seems like he's more interested in run defense than pass defense. I saw him a couple plays, you know, drop into coverage and maybe be on a guy covering, you know, a receiver. But he snapped the ball. His first step is downhill, which is awesome from a defensive intensity perspective. As a defensive back and you know, former coach, you'd love to see your defensive back's first steps be backwards, and dropping the coverage and then coming up. That's what you're always coached to do. Potentially an area that Utah could exploit with some play action. It's hard to know. Again, this is a guy that I would be aware of if I were Jason Beck. Number one, left cornerback Keith Abbey II. He's 6', 190 pounds. He's got 16 tackles, 1 sack, 1 forced fumble, 5 pass deflections, and 1 interception. This dude's got all the accolades. He's very dedicated to pass coverage, which makes him a great cornerback. But it also makes him a little bit easier to run off on run plays. He had a great pick against Baylor on a wide hitch, probably a ball that shouldn't have been thrown by the Baylor quarterback, but it was anyway. So he and his fellow cornerback, the right cornerback number 12, Jovian Robinson, he's a little bit smaller, 5'11", 180 pounds. The both of them, they both kind of play deep and stay deep, right? I mentioned before that not a lot of the defensive backs on ASU, except for Miles Rouser, are interested in run defense. Same can be said about their nickel back. We'll call him the Devil, I guess. Their Devil back. Number five, I don't know if it's Kindrich or Kendrick. Breedlove. No, he's 5'11", 195 pounds. He has played for 4 different teams over 4 years. Ole Miss, Colorado, Purdue, and now ASU. He plays pretty deep. Usually 12 plus yards off the ball. He gives a lot of cushion. He's pretty lazy getting down for run support from his deep alignment, even when the play comes to his side. Like if it's a screen that comes his way and it's crucial for him to blow up a block, he's pretty lackadaisical. He's very blockable. Saw him lots of times get blocked like 10 or 12 yards downfield, able to push him back a ways. I would run directly at number 5 if I were Jason Beck. Last guy to be aware of on the defensive backfield, free safety number 6, Adrian Wilson. This dude's got a little more meat on him. He's 6', 210 pounds. He's got 23 tackles, 1 forced fumble, 1 pass deflection, and 1 INT. I didn't see him do a whole lot against Baylor just in that film, but obviously he's out there getting stuff done with a stat line like that, so someone to be aware of as well. I think this is a group I don't think I know. You heard all those accolades, right? Pass deflections, interceptions, forced fumbles. This is a group that Devin Dampier has to take care of the football. I mean, we always say that, right? But he's with these defensive backs and linebackers, you've got to take care of the football. I mentioned goal line situations, 5-3. One time they had like a 4th and short against Baylor, and they ran like a 5-3 triple linebacker fire, meaning all 3 linebackers are blitzing, trying to stifle any momentum they get. And it actually ended up in pretty much it ended up being a touchdown, but Baylor went like 30 or 40 yards and got tackled on the 1-yard line. So something that was quickly, you know, going from being fourth and one ended up being a huge play for Baylor. So that's something that you'd love to see. Like my current favorite fourth and short yardage play is the fake QB draw jump pass. You'd love to see, you know, Jason Beck draw in ASU on that and trying to get him to say, hey, let's have a battle of the wills and the battle of the front line and see who can win out, and then just jump pass over him. I'd love to see that. Anyway, that is the scouting report. This one's going a little bit longer. I apologize. In my preseason prediction, ASU versus Utah, I predicted Utah to win this game. Now that we've seen more of Utah, we've seen more of ASU, a little bit harder to make that pick, but I still do want to make that pick. The odds makers have this as being a very close game, Utah being favored by, some people say 4.5 points, some people say 5.5 points. There's an over-under of 49.5. We mentioned earlier that ASU's defense averages 22 points allowed, and ASU averages 29 points offensively. Utah's defense allows 14 points per game, which actually drops to 9 per game if you take out kind of the garbage time scores against Texas Tech. Anyway, Utah's offense, meanwhile, is averaging 39 points per game. So just I think it's very easy to say that this game is going to go on the over. I think there's going to be a lot of points scored. The defense is, you know, sure, they do a good job of not allowing a ton of points, but I think we're going to go on the over. And I'm going to go with the odds makers. I'm going to go with my preseason self, picking Utah to win this game. It's going to be rainy, cold on Saturday night in Rice-Eccles. I saw a video earlier this week about Kenny Dillingham like pouring a water bottle on the football before snapping it to Kenny Dillingham so he'd get used to throwing a wet football. I think ASU could struggle in the cold and in the wind and in the rain. I think Utah is hungry to come out and prove themselves. I think it's going to be close, but I think it's going to end up being a game that's like 31-23, something like that. Kind of a repeat, like an 8-point win from last year, but this time in Utah's favor. So anyway, that is the film study. That is the scouting report. I'm super excited for this game. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Hope you guys feel like you know more about ASU, what to expect from them, what to look for, how to watch the game, and honestly just how to be a better football fan in general. I appreciate you guys listening in. Go Utes.